So mindfulness meditation, satipatthana, tries to simplify our experience of being human into four categories: body, feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, mind. Mind being, the word is citta, so it can be mood, it can be thought, all that kind of internal activity. So there's a broad range of things. So it's translated these days as mind, heart-mind, citta in the Pali, and dhamma. So these four: mind, pleasant, unpleasant feeling, mind, including emotions and all that, and dharma. So it suggests that we take this whole thing of being human, this complex experience, and just try to simplify into those four areas. And what's interesting about it is that it's trying to get us to stress the mindfulness rather than the object. So whatever your emotion is, what's important is the mindfulness. Whatever the body's doing, it's the mindfulness. And the way that is done is by stressing that that which has a nature to arise has a nature to cease. It's changing. And it's really not yours. It's the hard bit. It's a part of nature. So you study that, you ponder it, and then you start to practice with it, and that's what we're doing. So you stress, the stress is on awareness. So like, let's say, this morning I had a mild headache, right? So that if I stress the headache, then I get averse to the headache. I resist it, or worry about it, or think about it, or I get up and have a coffee, or, you know, whatever. And that's when I stress the object. And that's okay, we have to. But if I stress the awareness, then one of the things I'm noticing is that the mild headache is unpleasant. Right? It's unpleasant. Unpleasantness feels this way. And to do that, to be aware. And what is really unpleasant? What is unpleasantness? I'm giving you my thoughts, but I'm not thinking when I'm doing this. You're not going to think, what is unpleasant? Because that's attachment to thought. So how else do I explain this but with thought? So remember, you're not just sitting there, but it's, what is the feeling of unpleasant? But stop, quiet, look. That's what I mean. So you put a question in, but you don't just dwell on thinking, because then you just be attached to another object called thought. That's so unpleasant. Goes this way. And then I see the resistance to the unpleasant. Right? And I see the tension around that. And I notice the body more. But all the time I'm stressing awareness. Stressing awareness. And that leads to peace. The experience itself goes from unpleasant to neutral, back to unpleasant, back to neutral. I never got into pleasant. So then I played around with pleasant. So then I did some metta bhavana. Then I brought, I thought of my mom, brought her into my heart. Oh, that's pleasant. That's down here. And that pleasant feels this way. But always stressing the awareness. And, now, so what does that do in life? Well, once you begin to take refuge in awareness and see the how pleasant and unpleasant are just conditioned things, you begin to find the real source of liberation, peace, the transcendent spirituality in that awareness. But the trouble with the unpleasant and the pleasant and the body and the mind is that the unpleasant creates aversion and fear, and then that's what attachment is about. You know, I'm caught up with the object now, I'm not noticing the object. And the pleasant creates desire to perpetuate. But you can use the pleasant to calm the mind, but you can also use the unpleasant to calm the mind. You don't need just the pleasant. Say, like, when I laid down yesterday, that was extremely pleasant. End of a, you know, hard day on the cushion, right? And, oh gosh, it was so nice. But that, well, if I'm living for the pleasant, I have to do a lot of work to get this pleasant, don't I? That's what my life is about. I have to do all this work to just get this 10 minutes of pleasant. And that's what the pleasant does. It makes you work to get it. And you get it, if you get it. And then it goes. So that strategy is limited. It's pumping, you know, we do it. But it's got limitations. Whereas awareness is unlimited. You know, it's not limited by pleasant or unpleasant. You see what I mean? So, mind, body, pleasant, unpleasant, dharma. Dharma, and when there's enough presence of mind and enough wisdom or whatever you call it to actually notice that this is changing. Again, like the example of anger. I am angry and there is anger. When there is anger, there's a noticing, oh, it's changing. It's hot. It's tense. It produces certain kinds of thoughts. It's awareness. Whereas being lost in the object, in this case, whatever I'm averse to, is being consumed by anger. I am angry. The I thought, and there's no distance. But as soon as you can put the language of Dharma in there, where is this? Where's, you know, and what's this really feel like? But again, I'm emphasizing, you're not just thinking about it. What does this really feel like? Because that's whenever I describe these things, people then tell me about what they've been thinking. And I suggest they don't think, they observe. But how else can I explain things? I need words. So remember, you can make a suggestion to consciousness and then observe silently. I can make a suggestion around a headache, right? And it was, okay, let's do unpleasant this morning. What a lovely thing to do in the morning. Let's do unpleasant. And it's actually very calming. Right? Because there's mindfulness. So what to do with all that thinking? Anyone been thinking? Right? Thought is a part of nature. You know, it's not a right or wrong, but it seems like I am thinking, doesn't it? And then it seems like if I can get rid of thought, then I won't be thinking. But thought is just a part of brain function, just what it does. You're not thinking what I'm thinking, because you haven't got the experience that I have. You're not thinking about my mom, you're thinking about whatever, right? So one of the ways to work with thought is to notice the mindset behind it by recognizing that thought is symptomatic of a mindset. Noticing the mood behind it by recognizing that thought is symptomatic of a mood. Or doing the committee. Committee's good. You have all these committee members that come up and try to be the chair. Right? So the critic comes up, right? You're not meditating hard enough, or you should be doing this, and or they should have been more quiet when they walked in the shrine anymore, or the lasagna wasn't well cooked, or that's the critic, right? Now, what happens in meditation is quite often we notice we're thinking, we try to get rid of the thought by focusing on the breath. But that doesn't work. It usually makes you think more, and you get tense. But if you can just, there's the old critic. There's that committee member again, right? And you just, you look, you say, okay, so what does the critic feel like? Where is it? Then mindfulness is the chair of the committee meeting now. It's not the critic. And then you notice that it's gone. It's just silence. If it has a lot of emotional power, then you'll have the body to notice it in. Oh yeah, the mood of aversion, or the averse critic, or whatever, feels this way. It's tense in the face and in the shoulders. And then you're stressing mindfulness again. If you're stressing the getting rid of thought, you can't get rid of thought. It's just nature. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's the attachment, the preoccupation with thought, that prevents a deeper realization of our, what Ajahn Chah called our real home. It's not getting rid of it, but it's knowing it. So it's awareness of thought as thought. So in Satipatthana, in mindfulness meditation, you say to know the body as body, to know feeling as feeling, to know mind as mind, to know thought as thought. And a very good way to do that is just, there's that community member. So there you're mindful of thought, you're not trying to get rid of it, and it enhances your awareness. Right? I have one committee member called the Black Lab. If I've been in the condo too long, and I get outside, I'm like a black lab. I just lick you all over the face, and I'm like, tail wagging, you know, that's the Black Lab. And the mind's really like that, you know, because I've been stuck in this place. And then, you know, it's all happy and wagging tail, but I don't want to be a black lab. Not a good rebirth. I mean, I like black labs. They're lovely. I like to have one. So then I go, oh, there's the black lab. And then I stress the mindfulness again. And the black lab keeps coming up. And then, oh, there's the black lab. And that keeps me, you know, and there, I have more difficult characters too, don't worry. But you know, and thought is very, it's a very important thing to understand. And this way you can understand it, because you have to understand it, know it, and see it as a function in nature, rather than either the total absorption into it or the struggle to get rid of it. And that's the two we dwell on, those two extremes. So we say, know the mood of the mind, or know the mindset, or know the committee member, or, you know, whatever language works for you. But if there is a strong sense of me doing something, isn't there? Planning, thinking, judging, criticizing, hoping, expecting, anticipating. And then, oh, you still, oh, yeah, there's that guy. Right. And that brings you back from there. So all the time we're stressing awareness. You see what I mean? Awareness rather than the object. And the way you do that is by knowing this is an object of consciousness. This is changing. As soon as you bring that language in, you're back home. So Dharma brings you back home. And it's not, you know, it's like you have to live the Dharma rather than just believe in it in some kind of abstract way. I have to live anicca in the way I'm perceiving things rather than it just being a Buddhist proposition which I agree to. There's a difference, isn't there? And that's what practice is about, bringing the Dhamma into our perceptions. So we say, anicca sanya, cultivate anicca sanya. Sanya is perception. Cultivate the perception of change. And how do you do that? Not by thinking, the seasons are changing. You know, it's not thoughts. Like right now, quietly, so you take sound, okay, I notice the changing nature of sound. If I do that, then that makes me mindful, doesn't it? You just try that, just listen to sound. Right? It's changing. Now if you stress the quality of sound, you start to get uptight about it if it's not pleasant. Right? So if you're getting if you're starting to feel resistance about something on the retreat, physical pain, what other people are doing, temperature, you know, little simple things, it's really good to look at resistance, not wanting, as an object of mind. And because it's such a safe environment and it's so simple, you can learn a lot about that basic function of mind of grasping and attachment around simple things, something which isn't really no big deal. If you think you like let's say you dislike something about whatever in the retreat, if you think you shouldn't dislike it, then you're caught in a self-judgment one. Oh, you know, I should just be mindful. But actually, disliking and liking, that's all right. It's just the way you are. But it's the awareness of them that's the challenge, rather than believing in or disbelieving in them. Then you're free. You really are free. Because if you take a position you should like everything, you're not free. You're stuck in one half of life. Right? So, the body is body. To know body is body, like if I just feel the warmth of my hands together, to know body as body, I can't be describing that. If I'm saying warmth, then that's a thought, isn't it? So I'm not really with the body. I'm not aware of the body. If I just... then the mind is aware. It's silent. So I have to be in the moment. I have to, you know, be with the way things are. So the tactile nature of body, the energy nature of body, the discomfort, say. Discomfort is a very important one to notice, and so on. So body is body, mood is mood. And just the mood of being peaceful. Lovely. And then when it becomes unpeaceful, not lovely. But you can know that. So you're stressing awareness, awareness, awareness. Awareness, then once awareness becomes more continuous, you begin to be very interested in awareness. The objects no longer are so compelling. And what begins to be interesting? Well, awareness is interesting. And you begin to be aware of awareness. And then your mind really settles into that refuge, into your real home. And then in awareness you can respond well to things, no problem. And then so from that base of awareness, insight can arise, because you're really seeing things as they are. Really knowing things as they are.